suspicious of Salozzo's partnership with the Tagliatelle.
Oh my god! That is absolutely
No.
Okay, he did that purpose.
That's borderline racist.
That was brilliant. That was brilliant. You had me for a second. I was like, that's absolutely going in the final edit.
No, let's edit that.
No, that's absolutely going in partnership with the Tagliatelle crime family.
They met with the Fusilis. Welcome, dear listeners, to the final review, and I don't say episode, I say review, the final review of the current season of Back to the Pictures. Thank you for joining us as once more we take you for a trip down memory lane. But as Mrs. Doubtfire once said, you don't have to pack your bags because we're going in our minds. This is the movie review podcast that urges its listeners, don't talk to anyone. Don't touch anything, don't do anything, don't interact with anyone, and try not to look at anything. Just listen to our dulcet tones and you will be in good hands. We are three university friends who lived, studied, and danced to Candy by Cameo together in Manchester between 2005 and 2009. Somewhere in between these three activities, we watched an ungodly amount of movies. Now, in our ever cynical and existential 30s, we think it's a perfect time to rewind, rewatch, recontextualize, and if necessary, ravage these treasured movies from our past. So please join us as we dust off motion pictures, movies, flicks, films, and features from a simpler time. I am one of your hosts, Ben, leave the gun, take the cannoli. Rose?
Nice. And that's one of my favorite lines. You know that line was ad-libbed? I just put that out there.
What was it?
Oh, that's ad-libbed. I'm Anton. 20, 30 grand. It's Mo Bill's cash in that little silk purse. Maron, if it was somebody else's wedding, it's Hotorato Ogundimu.
Small Bill's cash.
Small Bill's cash. Literally, I've been doing that line for years by myself. The funny thing was, a little bit of tidbit for that, right? Ian was like, I've heard you say that like so many times, I'm just wondering what the hell it was from. Now you know.
And I am Ian. I don't want him coming out of that toilet with just his dick in his hand. Green.
As you already heard in the opening remarks, this is our final review of the season. It might not be the final episode because last season when we said it was the final episode, of course, we went on and on and on and had to cut it into two. So let's just hedge our bets and say this is the final review of the season. Like we did at the end of last season, we chose this movie, so we didn't use our usual formula of how we select which film we're going to watch next. This is a film that the three of us said, abso-fucking-lutely, let's do that. So you know, usually we let fate decide with the blind reveal. Didn't happen this time. You might say the film that we're reviewing this week is maybe the most influential film ever made. What do you guys think?
Yep. Voted as the second greatest American film of all time, behind Citizen Kane.
Well then, for the last time this season, potentially, tell me, Dr. Ogundimu, where are we going this time?
We are going back to 1972, and the film is the film, The Godfather.
The film is a bit of a gangster movie, it's a bit of a crime drama, it's a bit of an epic, whatever you want to call it, it's a movie. As we said, it's probably among the best known in world history.
Bit of a metaphor for capitalism.
Apparently. You say?
I didn't know that, but fair enough. Apparently it was.
So it was selected for preservation in the US National Film Registry of the Library of Congress in 1990, being deemed culturally, historically, aesthetically, significant. And it's ranked the second greatest film, as Anton said, in American cinema behind only Citizen Kane, which is just the most boring film I've ever seen in my life.
I need to see it because it is like one of the, but I know of it, but
It actually delegitimizes that list, in my opinion. So really? I wouldn't. I mean, it's just so boring. The movie won 3 Oscars.
Yep.
Best actor, best adapted screenplay, and best picture. Well, yeah, anyway, this film was directed by one Francis Ford Coppola. Mm-hmm. This guy is royalty in Hollywood. He was a main contributor of a group of filmmakers known as the New Hollywood that emerged in the early 70s. Their ideas challenged conventional filmmaking, and he was in good company. George Lucas, yep. Martin Scorsese, Brian De Palma, Terrence Malick, Robert Altman, Woody Allen, Steven Spielberg, all those people you might not have heard of.
It's funny because the whole, like, when I was doing, obviously, you know, there's this one documentary that I literally searched high and hell and high water for and couldn't freaking find, like it didn't exist. And it definitely did, because even as I was doing the trivia, all the stuff that I remembered about The Godfather is like listed in just like the trivia for it. So it was like, yeah, it was all true, and I definitely watched it. But I saw like another documentary that I happened to see about the American Zoetrope, the group with George Lucas and Francis Ford Coppola. And so it's just like, this one is like, even so George Lucas still had a hand in one of the greatest films as well. Not fair enough, he wasn't directly involved, but he was like one of the reasons Francis Ford Coppola actually did it, because George was like, look, we need the money, go do the film. And it was like, absolutely crazy.
I mean, these cats developed films that were so different than anything that had come before them. They were so morally ambiguous. I mean, the characters at least were. There was a lot more emphasis on sex and sexuality. There's more location shooting. The studio sound stages were less popular. Everything was more realistic. They just took that neorealism way from Italy, and they just took it to the next level in America. I mean, Coppola personally, I've seen only a handful of his films. I've seen Patton, the Godfather trilogy, Conversation, Apocalypse Now, Dracula. And I only really liked a handful of them, but obviously suffice to say, Godfather is in a league of its own.
Mm-hmm. Very much up there.
All our reviewed movies are rated U. This stands for University Standard. And seeing as students generally have lower standards than most other classes of people, viewer discretion is advised.
Do either of you know what the mob actually thought of this film?
Yep.
I think they were weary of it when it first came out, right? They weren't so pleased on the way it portrayed or was going to portray or expose them.
I'm going to have to go pure memory on this, because again, this is nothing I got in that random mystery documentary. So apparently there's a whole big thing, right? And I might have to go a little bit deeper with this. There's a whole big thing about, like you said, them being weary about them being kind of exposed, and more than anything, the kind of glorification of for general Hollywood, which was dying at the time, the glorification of mobsters in general, because mobster films just didn't work. They didn't sell, right? They were always kind of crappy, as opposed to the should I say spotlighting or highlighting or exposure of practices within the Cosa Nostra, right? So it was one of those things where they were like, not really. And they kind of had quite a hand, apparently had part of a hand in part of the troubles of the film being made. Like everyone, well, most people know about the movie, that the great movie that never got made, to the point where we've got like that TV series now, The Offer, which is annoying because when you search for documentaries, that's all you freaking find. But then eventually got to a point where as it was being created, and as the book got more famous, and as the film got more exposure, and certain, like, it was basically becoming evident this film was going to be great, and they showed the film. Apparently the mafia started adopting things from the film. So certain things that apparently the mafia never did that after The Godfather they now do. Things like the kissing of the, like, you know, the, like the way they greet each other and stuff. And all, and it was even kind of vice versa as well, where the scene where, sorry to jump ahead, but the scene where Vito Corleone gets shot. Do you know the reason why they focus on the hand, on the guns so much while they run there? It's because apparently the first time they did it, the way those guys were holding the guns, some mafia people were watching the film and started burst out laughing. And then Francis Ford Coppola and whoever else was like, what, why are you laughing at? And it was like, that's not how you hold a gun. This is how you hold a gun. So then the whole thing of the way they hold the guns in the films is apparently really legit because the mafia taught them how to hold a gun.
Really?
Yeah.
That's mad.
There's something a little bit more ambiguous about that.
I know there was one guy on set, like one of the cast who was related to the mob. And when they met him, they asked him to be in the film. And that's Luca Brasi. Apparently had mob ties.
Yeah, Lenny Montana.
Yeah, when they met him, he's like 6'4" or something. And just this huge. And they're just like, oh, man.
Isn't the term Godfather made up? It's made up by the author of the book.
Yeah, pretty much. So it's like, it's not, again, it's not seen as because there's a few things that the book, like, the book in a weird way is kind of like a romanticizing of that the Cosa Nostra in general. And apparently it was known for, or it was famous for bringing loads of words that kind of symbolize certain things, but weren't particularly used, but then almost kind of got adopted, like capo regime, consigliere, all that kind of stuff, with like actual titles and stuff, because it was, the structure and everything was there, but they didn't, apparently it didn't mimic as much as the film did, but then more, the film was almost a bit of an influence to the mafia itself, apparently, from things that I've, from the documentary that I read. So things like...
The documentary that you read?
Watched. That's the one. The documentary that I watched. So things like The Godfather and even like the whole thing about the Sicilian can't deny a request and the Davies daughter. Apparently that doesn't exist.
No, doesn't exist
either. Absolute bullshit as well. So yeah, I mean, in a weird way, there were certain things that were kind of taken or created by Mario Puzo, and then as they put it in, people just liked it. It was just like, yeah, this is cool. It's really weird.
But he could only, I suppose he could only create this story and this world and these characters using an interpretation of what he was obviously interpreting what he read and what he saw or what he spoke to. And the term Godfather is, I guess it has links to the fact that in the mafia, there's no democracy. It's a monarchy.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that. I think it's a pretty classy term he came up with.
It is.
Yeah, so Mario Puzo wrote it in 1969, and Paramount Pictures swept in and bought the film rights for just a meager $800,000.
Yeah.
Just before the book became popular, and didn't waste any time, as the film was released 2 years later.
Yeah.
Definitely his best known book, and he stated that the story came from research, as we said, into organized crime, and not from personal experience. He wanted to make that very clear. And that he was looking to write something that would appeal to the masses. Well, fuck me, you achieved that. And it remained in the New York Times bestsellers list for 67 weeks and sold over 9 million copies in 2 years. And the only other notable thing about Mario is that he penned the screenplay adaptation for this, but also Superman 1 and 2. So what? Let's just do it. Let's just say it. I'll ask Anton the question first. What's your history with this film?
In like,
don't cry.
I think I'm just trying to think. I think I started watching this film, or had the chance to watch the film properly, in uni, really. But I just remember watching certain things, and almost and again watching this freaking documentary that I just cannot find, and just being like fascinated by it. I put it to, remember when I hadn't seen Rent and I watched the documentary of Rent, or even, well, listened to it because I was half asleep, and then ended up watching it with you and
Ricky.
And then that, because of what, what's the guy's name who did Rent? Sorry, I apologize. I should.
Larson.
Because of what Larson had to go through, when I watched Rent, it was like, I get it. That makes sense. So
if I was writing an article about this podcast, Anton, the lead would be podcast host compares Godfather to Rent.
Yeah, so obviously I'm not comparing it to Rent in terms of I'm not comparing it to Rent in terms
of... Is that an exclusive? You are not comparing the Godfather to Rent.
That's an exclusive. I've never done. I've literally just got Rent songs in my head now. 525,600 million.
Bullets.
Yes. Oh, everyone is dead. Oh, my goodness. Sorry. But, okay, so I'm not comparing to Rent, but that kind of impact where, you know, you understand more about what you're watching before you watch the thing. I think that's what I had with The Godfather. So then, when I did get to uni, eventually I was just like, I'm going to, no, this is one of those films I'm going to buy on DVD, and I'm so freaking glad I did. Like, it's just, like, I think it's just an early, for me, it's just an early realization of my love for film and just being like, right, shit, this is what people are aiming for. This is it. You know what I mean? It was just so evident. And it just left like a mark. And even watching it again now, the three times I've watched it for this podcast, it was just like, freaking hell. Like, it's not bullshit. Like, this is legit. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. I can't describe it. I really can't.
Well, it's interesting just because my history is that I don't have much of one with it. I first watched it in 2005 with y'all. And my house growing up, as you guys know, wasn't a gangster one. We were Star Wars, Back in the Future, Ghostbusters, Lost Boys, Goonies, Terminator, Alien, RoboCop. I digress. We didn't watch many of what I would call mature grown-up movies, but we did watch a ton of horror and violent action. So when I was a teenager in secondary school, yeah, people were going on about five films, and it kind of drove me crazy. Films that you had to own, or you were a bit of a drip. Like, I think Scarface, Lock, Stock, Carlito's Way, Donnie Brasco, and The Godfather. And at the time, it just wasn't for me. I was into genre. I was into tentpole franchises. Yeah. I liked exploring the worlds of movies and their mythologies. I was into horror, sci-fi, action, dick and fart joke, teen comedies. My tastes, debatably, no, they obviously matured when I went to uni and then met you fine folk. And I do really love gangster movies, but I probably didn't get into them until I was in my early 20s. So if anything got me into The Godfather, I think you know what it was. Mm. And it's the game.
Yeah. I think, like...
Wow.
No, it is true. It is true. Like, it's... And we will obviously talk about the game, like, literally to point. My notes are just like... My notes have game points. Like, I literally just like... Game, and then have to write about it because it's so well done. But I think you're right. I think this is what the power of this film is. The older you get, right? I think, and sorry to cut you to annoy you, somebody's going to go with yours. But the older you get, I think the more you
I'm singing.
I think the older you get, the more you understand what is happening in the film. If that makes sense. Like you said, as a kid, it's not like it's an action, fast paced. It's like it's slow, and it's dialogue, and it's talking, and it's scenes, and it's scenery, and it's family, and it's hierarchy and monarchy and respect and business and killing and your family and my family. So it's like, but the older you get, you realize how much more important those things are to you. So the older you get, even despite how good the film is, the more you appreciate the film, because then you're like, no, I get it. No, if I was in that position, I'd do, no. Wait, oh, no, you can't do, oh, yeah, oh, that. So it's like, the older you get, the more it resonates with you. And so it's a weird freaking formula that's what makes the film timeless, because everyone's going to have that.
It's not to say I had to go old and cynical. I mean, I started watching the Goodfellas and Casino, like De Niro's movies first, but I was always... You know, I was always high on Goodfellas. I love Goodfellas, but I resisted Godfather for a long time because I felt like it was a movie that not only you had to see, but you had to like it.
Yeah,
if you didn't like it, it was a problem. Yeah, luckily I did like it, but you know, still.
Yeah, I came that route as well, because I always remember watching Goodfellas and absolutely loving Goodfellas and Lock, Stock. But I think they was just louder and more violent, like loads of crazy action scenes, and Godfather didn't need it. And to be honest, I was convinced I'd watched the Godfather trilogy, that I'd seen all of the Godfather films, and it turns out I'd just seen the first one, but in sections. So, like, I thought Sonny died in the second film. And I thought that the end of the trilogy is Michael gets revenge and kills all the heads of the families.
But so, in a weird way, it would be like a trilogy. Do you know what I mean? That is kind of like, yeah.
He goes back to Sicily, and that's the second film.
Do you know what's funny? Nothing's changed. That's still how you view movies.
It's so true. It really is.
Absolutely true. But yeah, I saw this film broken up many times until we watched it together, and I think that's probably the first time I've sat down from beginning to end and watched it.
Should we talk about the fucking cast?
Let's go.
So, let's start with the man who is in the film for near 40 minutes of 175-minute runtime.
That's madness.
That would be one Marlon Brando.
That's really?
Yeah.
God, it feels like he's... I think that's just Vito Corleone's legacy. You just see it throughout the entire film. But man, that's crazy.
It's funny because it's rare that we talk, because our movies are more kind of like fast food movies as opposed to, you know, these three-course meal exceptional movies.
Yeah.
And so it's rare that we talk about an actor of this caliber on the podcast. And that's not a knock on the amazing talent that we reviewed. It just means in terms of icons, right?
Mm.
Other than maybe Gene Wilder, we've never discussed a person who now belongs in human history.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this is the guy, one of only six actors that Time magazine named in its list of the 100 most important people of the 20th century. And in that list, Time also designated Brando as the actor of the century.
That's madness.
Sometimes, right, his life on screen paled in comparison to his life off screen.
Mm.
And yet sometimes his on-screen presence was how people defined him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that funny? He came to national attention playing, the equally iconic role of Stanley Kowalski in the movie adaptation of Tennessee Williams' play, Streetcar Named Desire. Personally, one of the top 20 pieces of writing I've ever seen, read. He starred on the waterfront, Guys and Dolls, Apocalypse Now, Superman 1 and 2, and of course The Godfather.
Yeah.
Julius
Caesar as well was one of the early ones for me, for him. Like, that was one of the ones that kind of really sticks out.
Yeah. There's so many. He was fucking difficult off screen.
Yeah, apparently so.
His reputation as a bad boy preceded itself, and he was incredibly promiscuous. He'd make Russell Brand blush.
Mm.
And he had at least 11 children that he knew about, and it was wildly bisexual. He had affairs with men as much as he did with women. I mean, this guy just fucked everybody. And this is his magnus opus.
Mm. Yeah. And again, like I said, one of the things they didn't want, because of his, obviously, his history and the way he was, they really didn't want him for the film. Like, really, really didn't want him. Apparently, there was a whole joke about how, you know, Waltz is like, Johnny Fontaine is never going to be in a movie. Apparently, dude, that was pretty much how it was. Like, Marlon Brando's never going to be in this movie. And yes, he was. Yes, he absolutely was.
One thing that we don't usually or have never done on this podcast before is talk about acting. Mm. Not in the real sense of the word. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get what you mean. I get what you mean.
But this film really yearns for a really quick discussion, if you don't mind. So, Brando, he was a student of Stella Adler. She herself was a disciple of Stanislavski. And she taught Brando alongside a fucking who's who of Hollywood talent at the time. Steve McQueen, Robert De Niro, Martin Sheen, Harvey Keitel, Melanie Griffith. So the method is where it's a way actors are trained to use physical, mental and emotional, their emotional selves in their work, creating characters that live and breathe. It's using personal experience to draw out something really special in the performance. So, as I say, this comes from Stanislavski's Russian theater pioneering. And it mostly comes into play during rehearsal, where actors are kind of encouraged to think about the psychological processes of the character and how they can identify given their own past sort of trauma and experiences. So directors can either love this or fucking hate it, depending on what kind of director you are.
Yeah.
You're either collaborative or you're authoritarian. Now, the difference really laid bare is a classical actor is dealing with the external behavior of the performer and reacting to your fellow performer, whereas the method is internal and it will seek to bring out psychological aspects of the character that might not be on the page. So, yeah, you also get character actors who, you know, they'll rely on stylized performances with sort of eccentricities that are already fleshed out, but there is also other techniques that are more improvisational. And I mention this because it's well noted that Francis Ford Coppola held improvisational rehearsal sessions that simply consisted of the main cast sitting down in character for a family meal.
So the
actors and actresses, they couldn't break character, which Coppola saw as a way for the cast to organically kind of establish the family roles that you see in the film. And, Godfather in the performance of the character of Vito is the only viewing of the film a student should want to seek out if they want to see what goes into the method, because Don Corleone did not start living when the camera, you know, cuts to him, you know, when that guy is in the opening, you know, in the opening scene. Thanks to the work Brando put into this character, he has lived an entire life, and it's
absolutely
written into the fabric of everything this character does.
You can see it, like, I think that's one of the things with The Godfather, and I think it's so obvious. It's like, it's going to sound stupid in a way, because obviously the more you watch it, the more you know what people are going to do. Of course you are. But, like, you understand why they made the decisions they make. Like, when you understand the characters completely and so much, it's like, they, again, like you said, they so envisage the character that they're playing that it makes it, you almost forget like there's a script, if that makes sense. Like, it's just, it's like, understand who these people are. We'll give you time to do that from the first, in the first part of the film. Now watch them live. Right? And that's what's so convincing.
That's a great way of putting it.
About, because it is, and we'll talk about it when we get to the actual film as well, but that's exactly what they do. They just set it up. This is this person. This is what they do. This is how they've done. And they're even so smart, right, as to do it through other people. Because at the beginning, a lot of the history of the character is said through Michael. Yeah. And the reason why it's said through Michael is because he's the person we're learning about throughout. Like, because everyone talks about that's the whole, like, debate. Who is the Godfather we're actually talking about? Is it Don Corleone or is it actually Michael? Because really, it's actually Michael, right? Mm. That's the Godfather in the name of the film. And it's like, because he's new and you're learning about him, they give you his perspective and he tells the history so that you're learning, like, almost not like him, obviously, but you're learning in his position now. You're new and he's new. You're going to learn how he is and so it's going to be, but here's the history of everyone else. This is what Luca Brasi did. This is what my dad did. This is what Sonny did. This is what Tom Hagen came through. You're learning all that through Michael, the new person. And it's like, cool. And then now it's like, you know everyone now. Cool. You're part of the family. You've been to the wedding. You know, that scene, which is fucking just ridiculously well done. Now let's watch everyone live.
I absolutely love the bit. The bit that made me, like, jump with or change how you see him is you start the film and he's just sort of like an old man, you know, like taking all these. And you see the respect that's given to him. Sorry. Like, you know that he's hierarchy, but his conversation with Johnny Fontaine, you know when he's like screaming at Johnny to, like, be strong. It really shows you how much, like, the Don Vito Corleone.
You can act like a man!
You know, like, the fire. He's like, I can't get over it. It's just like, he's trying to make everyone around him better. Yeah. It's like, to see the energy come from him, it's not like this, it was such a great...
Do you want a little tidbit about that? So, yeah. Marlon Brando, right? Obviously, as you said, the whole, like, so being into it. The guy who plays Johnny Fontaine, I forgot his name, but I had it there. It is, give me 2 seconds.
Al Martino?
Yeah, Al Martino, that's it. Al Martino. So, you know this, we know when he slaps him. That wasn't in the script. So, like, when Tom Hagen and everyone reacts to that, everyone's confusion is genuine. And Al Martino was like, I didn't know whether to laugh or cry. That confusion is literally just like, and it reminds me of, like, you know how Heath Ledger was in the Joker, where it's just like, I understand this character fully. This is how this character would act, and I understand why they would act that way. And it is just that. It's brilliant. Even down to the look and the slow, like, even the mumbling, you know, like the mumbling and stuff.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
Like, again, not anything that was done or described or spoken about. It was just like, this guy would mumble. Oh, and he'd also look like a bulldog. So Marlon Brando stuffed cotton wool. That's how he got the cheeks. And then eventually they then created a mouthpiece that he then put in his mouth to keep it there. Because obviously he couldn't keep the cotton wool there. And that's why it was just like, yeah, he's an old, stately, like, almost like a book, like, powerful if you push it the wrong way. But really, we all know bulldogs are actually quite lovable, even they don't look it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I love the little subtle things he gave him, where he whenever he wipes his mouth, he does it with his hand, like, open. He does it with his little finger, so he doesn't cover his face.
Yeah.
It's so theatrical, just like, the little tricks.
It's the way, even the way, you notice even the way he scratches his chin. He never, like, when he does scratch his chin, it's always like the, like, up, down, hand, like you said, hand open, underneath. But it's always like, you know, like that when you got, like, an itch in your beard and you scratch under your neck, but then you don't just scratch like a normal person. It's like the back of your fingers once or twice. It's like, even the scratching is calm. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I'm a calm guy. I have the potential, but I'm calm.
Because nothing was rushed. You're almost on the edge of your seat waiting for his next.
He's the original. He's the original Dom. It's about family.
Absolutely. Did you hear, I don't know if this, I presume this is the right place, but did you hear about the pranks on set that was carried out? I think Brando started them. But did you hear about the mooning that they all got involved in?
No, it became a thing.
Mate, it's mad. Loads of them, like, Brando started it by, like, starting a scene with, like, his ass out. And they started doing stuff. apparently it got really bad. And there were scenes where, there's a scene where Sonny pulls up in a car alongside Don Vito Corleone. And instead of his head hanging out the window, he had his ass. So James Caan and Marlon Brando apparently were the two worst. Like, they were, like, hanging off the corners of the set, so that art, like, the bum was just hanging, like, above. And they were doing it. All of them got involved, apparently. However, Brando, I can't remember the scene off the top of my head, sorry. But he did one where I think he flashed, like, 300 people. I think he just had his ass out, him and Tom Hagen. But they gave him, like, a WWE-style belt with, like, the Moonfather or something.
The Moonfather! There was something amazing
on the belt, but he got a... And then it was like, yeah, we need to read
that. That's amazing. That's incredible.
So, Al Pacino, of course, as Michael Corleone. I mean, this is a guy where I think most semi-serious movie fans, not even like movie connoisseurs, movie fans would have seen the majority of his films because they're all just so good.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite is actually Devil's Advocate.
Oh, interesting. I haven't seen that film. I know of it quite well, funny enough, but I've never actually seen it. Keanu Reeves.
Fucking amazing. Carlito's Way, of course. Donnie Brasco, The Irishman, he was in recently. He was also in Ocean's 13, where he played a pretty good villain. And Scent of a Woman, where he plays the blind retired army general. Fucking amazing.
Yep.
Obviously Scarface. I never cared for Scarface.
Yeah.
Have you seen Heat?
Ah, mate.
Yeah.
It kissed me my toes. On my spot, where I gotta be. That's straight, man. That scene between him and Robert De Niro. Bro, man, it's all about Heat.
That's a long film.
Oh, yeah, that is a long ass film. And Dick Tracy, for me as well, is another massive
film. Yeah, he's great. Dick
Tracy. Man, he's fucking, like, for ages, I was just like, I didn't realize it was, so I was like, oh my God, that's Al Pacino.
Yeah. I also love Any Given Sunday. You know, I love my sports
films. Yeah. Mate, there's literally so many. There's too many. There's literally just too many. Have any of you guys seen The Irishman? That newer one?
So me and Lauren watched it like in four sittings.
Yeah, because apparently you have to like break it down into like three. So that is a film you can actually break down into three if you wanted to.
I will anyway, regardless what
film. It's watching YouTube shorts in the spaces of like 10 seconds each.
Talking about De Niro and Pacino together, they did an absolute stinker that me and Noah saw in the cinema together in America called Righteous Kill.
Okay.
The twist was so fucking obvious, like within 2 minutes, I was like, this is what the film's about. And it just took it out of me. It took the wind out of the sails. Like, they tried to make it out like this big reveal at the end, which I will not spoil on this podcast, but it was like the worst twist I've ever seen.
Wow. Yeah, it looks like a 50 Cent, is it? What a cast! 50 Cent, John Leguizamo. Okay.
Yeah, I might actually give that a watch. It won a couple of awards as well.
What did I just kill? No, it didn't.
No, this is no,
one win, two nominations.
Righteous Kill.
Yeah, it won a Razzie.
Yeah. It won a freaking Alien.
There's no chance in hell this won exactly. a positive award.
Yeah.
I love just reading headlines, what could I say? I never click into actual articles.
It won an award.
The other award that film won, by the way, Ben, was the most egregious age difference between the leading man and love interest. It's awful. Robert De Niro, 68, and Carla,
Gugino,
yeah.
37. That is awful.
It was pretty bad.
Wow.
So, Diane Keaton, as we say, Kay Adams, I know her from Father of the Bride.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes, definitely. She will always be the mother and father of the bride for me. Absolutely. She was amazing in that.
Sorry for anyone who's just like, what? She was in so many good films.
I know, but for me, she literally, that is an Agundamu film, that is.
They were like, she was in Annie Hall, you fucking prick.
It literally is. She's been in so many films, but Father of the Bride for me was yeah, mm. yeah, absolutely.
John Cazale as Fredo.
Yep.
Oh, this dude did such a great job of making me hate him. I hate Fredo so much.
John Cazale. Fredo is the village idiot, though. That's exactly what he was meant to be.
Such a good job.
He was so method, the actor died in his 40s. Sorry, that was a really bad joke.
Okay, I don't know if this is like an unfortunate continuation of the joke, but the picture on IMDb, I was sitting there thinking, wow, he still looks really good. I'm just
it's the last picture of him alive.
It's like, wow, he, compared to everyone else, he looks great.
He was in some fucking bangers, though. He was in Deer Hunter, The Conversation, which is one of my favourite films of all time, Dog Day Afternoon.
Mm.
Yeah, he's done some... He got in some good films before his untimely passing. Another one who left us... I would say he left us too soon. He had a good life. But James Caan, who... Yeah. Died a couple of years ago. He played Sonny. I think this generation will know him from happier films like Elf and Mickey Blue Eyes. But for me, Misery is the one.
Yeah, yeah. For me, so is it? I swear he's in the film with is it John Travolta as well? What is that film called? If I find it, I will have it on there. Come back to me on that one. But yeah, he absolutely nails it in this film. And it's funny because, again, like you said, he isn't Italian, which again is funny because the studio was having a whole big thing about how they didn't want Al Pacino to play it because he's a short Italian guy, and then they didn't want James Caan because he wasn't Italian. And it's like, what? Ooh. But man, he Santino, like he absolutely, Santino's one of the most Italian people for me in the film. The hand gestures are unbelievable. Like, watching the film, the bit where Vito's shot and then Clemenza comes in to update and he's like, watch your mouth, and he pushes him up against the door. I forgot that I learned the hand gestures he does in that bit where he's talking about porn. He's like, 2-3 times. Like, it's so freaking, it's amazing, like, how expressive he is.
I love James Caan. He'll always have a place in my heart. But just to give you an idea, he is responsible for my one and only bollocks card.
Ooh.
In The Godfather.
Oh, there is bollocks. Oh, my lord.
We may have had the same idea.
But
find it
if,
when we get to it, I guess.
Yeah, and if it's the bit where I'm thinking, then funny enough, I've got a funny story around that bit. But I'll, yeah, we'll keep going.
Okay. Well, then before we make you an offer you can't refuse, let's play that trailer.
My father's no different than any other powerful man who's responsible for other people.
If I had this part in the picture, it puts me right back up on top again.
This Hollywood big shot's gonna give you what you want.
He says there's no chance.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
You know my father. Men are coming here to kill him.
Now you want to get mixed up in the family business?
I thought you weren't going to become a man like your father.
I never wanted this for you.
Freedom, you're my older brother, and I love you. But don't ever take sides with anyone against the family again. Ever.
Michael, do you renounce Satan and all his works?
I do renounce him.
Don't ask me about my business, Kate.
Is it true?
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
So this is the point of the podcast where we warn you, spoilers come thick and fast, faster than Sunny at the wedding. So if you want to pause the podcast and go watch the film, then go ahead. But if not, then let's crack on.
The Godfather is a 1972 American crime film.
For fuck's sake.
Oh, dear God, guys. 1, 2, 3, 4.
There's five paragraphs.
Let's go.
Yeah.
Right.
I want all the Italian names and
some of
them said properly. So I don't want Consigliere, it's Consiglieri, and I want like Vito Corleone and like Tom Hagen and Tatalia and Solozzo. You know, I want all of it. Two Z's in Italian is a Solozzo. Okay, so
I'm gonna be like a British hooligan on holiday in Europe. That's the sort of pronunciation you get.
Oggy, call me yo.
Consigliere.
Consigliere?
You spy. What, Omega?
Spy! Oh, fuck, I've got crap. What's that?
He made him a fucking offer. He couldn't refuse, could he? Mug. Read by Daddy Dyer.
Dad, I'm sorry, they're in Spain.
In Spain?
Spain.
Oh, fuck. I actually laughed so hard I got cramp in my back.
Ian, you were like, oh, you got yourself nicked, love.
That's fucking brilliant.
Drug baron Slozzo asked me about the narcotics.
Seriously, you could do Bricktop in Godfather, it will work.
You could.
These mugs, the Taglia crime family, send an enforcer. Luca Brasi.
I believe in America. Fucking can't.
They only fucking garroted him. the thing is, I'm making fun, but this is exactly what I'm going to be fucking saying. I'll try my best.
You stop me again whilst I'm buying apples.
I'll cut your fucking Jacobs off.
In 1940,
I got wearing hockey pads.
I fucking knew this was. Yeah. In 1945, the New York City Corleone family don, Vito Corleone, listens to requests during his daughter's Connie's wedding to Carlo. Vito's youngest son, Michael, a Marine who had thus far has stayed out of the family business, introduces his girlfriend, Kay Adams, to his family at the reception. Johnny Fortane, a popular singer and Vito's godson, seeks Vito's help in securing a movie role. Vito sends his consigliere, Tom Hagen, to persuade studio president Jack Waltz to offer Johnny the part.
Waltz refuses Hagen's request at first, but soon complies after finding the severed head of his prized stud horse in his bed.
So this opening scene, the first line of the film pretty much labels the theme of the movie.
I believe in America.
I believe in America. I believe in America. Sad fucking story, I believe in America story.
Yeah, for real. Is that one of the like most famous opening scenes of a film ever?
If not the most famous.
Like
some people, people say Citizen Kane because fucking Rosebud. Fuck off.
Mm.
But it is probably the most recognisable. But can I make a confession, but just want to ask, is the tale that Bonacera is telling, is the point of this whole, like, I can't, is it clear what he's actually, I know because I've watched it so many times, but at first I wasn't clear what his problem was.
I got it. I mean, it made sense to me. It was pretty easy to understand. It's more, there's a lot, long story short, we know what's happened. I think what where there could be confusion would be the, what he actually wanted him to do, because he doesn't state it specifically. He just into the air, and then you understand what he's done.
Yeah.
More from what Vito says back to him. So I think that's the kind of the only confusion. Yeah. But I think you basically understand what he wants him to do.
Now I understand it's clear as crystal. And the tale of Bonacera is the point of the whole film, right?
Exactly.
Those that can call in a favour will receive a favourable outcome.
Mm, mm.
And if you try and play within the rules, you'll receive nothing but mediocrity. So,
exactly that.
I mean, it's perfect. It's absolutely fucking perfect.
Exactly that. And it lays it out as well, because it's almost an entire premise as to why what is important. Is like you said, I believe in America, and America didn't help me. So now I have to now go outside of that to where family matters more than it does to America.
Well, take a step back from that, because the first thing he says is, I believe in America. America has made me a fortune. Yeah. So right there, it's telling you that this character thinks America equals money.
Yeah.
And money equals America. And this is from an immigrant point of view.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. Exactly that. The first fucking line. It tells you everything you need to know about this film.
And it's so true as well. It's like, why did you go to the police first? Why did you go to the police? Why didn't you come to me first?
Yeah, and that I didn't actually realise until maybe my second or third watch. We're talking obviously decades ago. But I didn't realise at first that's what Don Corleone was upset about.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't entirely clear what the Don was mad at. He accuses Bonacera for not wanting to be in his debt and for asking him to commit murder for money.
Yeah.
But doesn't he says, well, first he says, A, he should have come to him first before going down the legal route. And B, Don doesn't even want his money. He wants him to owe the Don.
It's also the friendship part thing as well. Like he actually says, Vito's wife is Bonacera's daughter's godmother.
Yeah.
She's like, you don't even call me godfather. She's like, so for you, it's now a case of, oh, you come to me now because there's an issue. Whereas if we were friends from the beginning, like he says, they'd have feared you. So this is about friendship and family, as it is the thing. But what comes with that is respect. And if you'd have come to me as a friend, not pay me, because again, it's like you said, Bonacera, why have I done to you that you insult me, in terms of the fact that he's like,
yeah, he's really upset.
And it's true, because it's and
he says, what have I ever done to make you treat me so disrespectfully?
Absolutely. And that's what is so important about that, because it's like, look, I'm here for justice. You want me to kill these people. I'm not going to go kill them because I'm not a murderer. However, because I care enough about my friends, this is how I've gotten to the position that I am, then I will offer that as justice because you are my friend, not because you come to me being like, I can pay you because you're a Don. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And he says it's cheeky that you come to me on the day of my daughter's wedding. I can't
refuse it. Exactly.
I also think that the first scene, Anton, you said, is it the most, you say it's the most impactful, you asked, is it the most impactful or is it the most well-known?
Yeah, most recognisable.
Well, Well, because that's a problem in itself, because I think the problem The Godfather has in the 2020s is that this current generation have been raised on movies and TV that basically rip off films. Absolutely. Like Godfather.
Absolutely.
So the Godfather itself becomes a cliche. Absolutely. A movie full of tropes, because no one acknowledges that it was the originator of those tropes.
Absolutely. It's like, even the way Don Corleone speaks, you hear it in so many, you know, like so many other films and media and other stuff, like use it as like a meme, as a like, whenever you need to talk seriously, you talk like Don Corleone. Yeah, you come to me on the day of my daughter's wedding. Like, that line has got to be one of the most famous lines from that ridiculously famous scene as well. You come to me on the day of my daughter's wedding. Like, if I said that to anyone, most people are like, Godfather, even if they've never seen it.
Yeah.
They don't appreciate, or it's maybe not appreciate what movies like Godfather brought to the table.
Oh, man. That thing saved, like, or at least saved studio Hollywood, is probably the best way to put it.
The cat is a stray, isn't it?
Yep, stray cat. They found it on a set, and the cat was so happy, just chilling. Yep, Marlon Brando just took it. And to the point where the purring was so loud, they had to redo his lines because it purred so loud. And here's the funny thing. So I watched the film, obviously I said I watched the film like three times. I watched it from my DVD, then I watched like, I didn't realize there's an updated version where they've like, they've changed the lighting, because there's a whole big thing about lighting. Again, we'll probably get to that as well in terms of the creation of the film. Like, to the point where I can't remember the director actually ended up getting like one of the, I'll find the trivia, but like he basically, they end up calling him like Angel of Death or something like that, because the lighting was just so low. And when I watched, after I watched it from the DVD and then watched this updated version, I was like, Jesus Christ, it is actually really not dark in terms of this, like the setting. It just is a genuinely dark film. But they also updated the sound as well. And you can literally just hear that cat just purring and just rumbling because it's so happy the entire, like all the way through that he's holding him.
That's so funny.
It's hilarious.
And he looks like he owns that cat. He really does.
Yeah, it does. Because the cat is just like playing with him, just happy to be there.
When we start off at the wedding, nothing has to be explained. It's obvious that it's a mob wedding. You know, when it's like fucking FBI, it's all laid out for you. You know, we don't need to be told. This film takes such good care of the details. You said it, man.
Yeah, absolutely does. It really does. Even down to like the whole, like, I know at one point when that girl is dancing on Tessio's feet. It's like, my dad used to do that with my sisters. It's like, there's even, and I'm talking obviously like African, Nigerian, Anglo heritage. It's like, even in a random film about Italians in 1972, I could still find stuff that relates. And that makes sense. And it's so, and if it's not that, it's the wider overall family thing, just in general anyway. Because obviously, for the majority of people who are blessed enough to have families, like, you can understand the need to protect it, but again, it's the specifics of the details. Like, I did that song, like Cella Luna Matsumare, I did so much research even into that particular song itself as well. Cella Luna Matsumare, mamma mia, mamma di dare, figlia mia, cosa dare, mamma mia, pensaccia tu. And kind of what it meant and stuff, and why is it met with such hilarity in the thing, and like it's played at many Italian weddings, and it's about the colloquial English name is Lazy Mary, basically, and it refers to like loads of it refers to trying to marry the daughter Mary off, but there's so many versions of it. The original first one was like Paolo Citorello in 1927, and there's been like 40 versions, but the really famous version apparently is actually by Dean Martin. The really famous version is done by Dean Martin and Lou Monte as well.
One of the things I would love the power from the wedding, you can all kind of relate, is I absolutely love the photographer that goes up, I think it's to Barzini, and snaps the picture, and he just snaps his fingers, and it's like, we've all been at weddings where randomly you have that photographer just looming, and I know you want great pictures and like pictures of action happening, but yeah. I thought that was absolutely hilarious. He's obviously doing it because he doesn't want pictures of him.
Yeah, obviously, he's done of another. But
that family. Power was absolutely incredible to be like, hey.
Yeah, it was great how he, like, he, the other guy took it, but then like gave him the film to destroy. It's like
yeah.
Even the other guy could have destroyed the film, but he wants to be able to do it himself to destroy the film himself. It's absolutely it is awesome, but it's just loads of little stuff. Like even you know Luca Brasi, where he's practicing his lines and stuff. Like that was actually Lenny Montana actually practicing his lines, and then they just got a video, and then when he goes in and he messes up the actual like line, and then has to stop and then do it again. That again was a genuine mistake, and Francis Ford Coppola was like, "No, we're leaving all of that because it just makes it look more genuine and fits more with Luca Brasi's character." I was like, "Freaking hell, that's amazing."
Do you feel like the Don doesn't like Luca Brasi?
So, I know why you said that, right? Because he was just like, "Is this necessary?" You know, for the thing, and it's just like,
yeah,
but it was. But I think what he meant, was it was more the fact that like. Again, because there was a list of people that he had to run through, right?
Yeah.
And I think he just thought it's like, is what, I think it was more just kind of like, we know what Luca's job is, right? He's been doing it for a while. It's like, we don't really expect anything from him. He's part of the family. Do you know what I mean?
Why would he not like his personal enforcer?
Yeah. But I think it's more just the fact that he meant more like it was, Is it necessary for him to kind of come and give a gift? Because it could almost be like, look, no one else from the family kind of needs to ask for a particular gift. It's more kind of strangers and stuff like that. Whereas Luca obviously was just, he just felt like he didn't think or see himself so much as part of the family, which is why he was so honored to be invited.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I think it's also just double stats the fact that he then sends Luke on a very dangerous mission afterwards. It's just, I know I'm definitely reading into it way too much, but I was just like, hey, Luca, go join another family and tell them that you're not happy with this one. I was like,
it is
buying that.
He's clearly undercover though.
It's just, there's no way Luke, from what everyone says, Luca is like the most loyal. Out of anyone, Luca is no way in any way, shape, or form.
He sent him to his death.
Like, but I definitely think it was poor decision making from the Don.
No, I think it was just one of those where I think we understand it because Michael has explained it to us, right? Whereas other families won't. It's just business. Do you know what I mean? Like, you hear that a lot. It's just business. But for me, one of the parts I thought was hilarious, and for me, I've actually given an award, and I've called it the Eddie Murphy Get Out Award. Right, and for me, I'm literally hitting the lines. Too bad I can't stay, right? Because when freaking Kay is asking all these questions about the family.
Oh,
and
right.
And Michael is explaining this stuff, and he's like, Michael, at first, because I remember thinking, why is he telling all this shit? But at first, he actually does try to like protect her from it. He's just like, no, and she's prying. No, Michael, tell me, and then he's just like, yeah. He said either freaking your brains or your signature are going to be on the paper, and she just looks there, and then as she's looking like confused as fuck, he's like, that's a true story. I'm like, I'm sorry, I literally, too bad I can't stay. See you later. I'm been gone. And she just sits there.
I can think of one good reason why you would stay. 30 grand bills.
30 grand. It's four bills cash in a little silk purse.
Because, I mean, as scary as it must be, to be there and just be like, but there's so much power and wealth.
There literally is.
It's hard to know where to go next because obviously, like, the most famous scene is the horsehead scene, but like loads is happening around that scene.
And I think this was the beauty, in my opinion, of the game, where it actually enhanced your knowledge of the film. Like for me, I literally can see the reason I know all the five families is because you know they're listed in the game and they're listed in different colors. So Strachi was blue, Tatalia was yellow. Barzini was green, Corleone was black, and red was Cuneo. Cuneo was red. So that's how I learned the five families and the boroughs and where they all lived as well. So it filled gaps that didn't need to be filled, but just enhanced it. So again, another mission that you had in the game was, it was your mission to go cut off the fucking horse's head and put it in the bed.
I remember that mission more than anything in the game.
It was absolutely incredible because you had to like sneak around, and it was so like while Tom is having his meeting, yes, and in a weird way, then because sometimes, because I remember some a few, like one of the first few times I watched it, I was like, how the hell did they do that? Like, how the hell would you sneak? Yeah. And then when the game has filled that gap for me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. The thing is, the game also takes liberties because it's suggesting that happened. So it suggests that Tom Hagen already knew that
was exactly
wasn't going to go well, which is not how it's portrayed in the film. In the film, Hagen is sent to speak to the producer about Fontaine, and he finds out that the producer is a fucking nutter who wants everything. He's like, well, I kind of understand the producer not wanting to be strong-armed, but this was a film that taught me that the scary guy is the guy who doesn't react.
Yeah.
So the producer is mad and aggressive, but it's Hagen who's calm.
Hagen doesn't. Oh, like he's like not at all, and there's such a quiet strength with him.
He's like, well, because he's the hand of the power.
Oh, man.
So yeah. So you know when he says, "You must excuse me." Don Corleone likes to get bad news immediately. Mm. Fucking hell. If someone said to me, I'd be like, wait, hold on.
So I know. It's everything. it's like, he's like, oh, ask anything else of me. He's like, Don Corleone Mr. Corleone isn't the type of guy to ask a second favor when he's refused funds. Do you understand? I was like, do you understand in my house? What's up? Fuck it up. So that's some ballsy shit.
Yeah, so like when you see them, when you have that mission in the game where you're cutting off the horse's head, I just don't get the, I would have thought that Tom Hagen was telling the truth. He's like, okay, now you've disappointed me. I have to then go and tell this to to Don Corleone and we'll see what the repercussions are. But it's the game suggesting that they already had the plan.
Yeah, pretty much. I think it was one of those things where it's like, If not, because you think about it, right? There's no way they'd have the plan without knowing that there was a horse there. So they had to know and find out what was important to this guy. So I think it was one of those things where it's like, okay, cool. We know this horse means a lot to this guy. If this goes wrong, we're cutting his head off. Long story short.
Yeah, but he's cutting his head off while the meeting's going on.
I don't think it's that
cool. Can you imagine if they cut their horse's head off and the guy's like, yeah, do you know what? You're right. Fontaine's in the movie. They're like, ugh. Oh. Ian, I know what you're thinking. Someone's been biting the heads off the horses.
Did you here as well, that apparently it was a real horse's head they used in the film.
Yeah.
There was a nearby food place that used horses to create dog food, I think. So they had access to a real horse's head. And it upset a lot of the cast, apparently, which understandable, but...
fucking hell. Coming home from work and explaining that. How was your day? you're on a big Hollywood movie set. It must be fantastic. They're like, no, I didn't realise I was standing next to a big fucking real horse's head severed.
Fucking hell, man! I give it to John Marley because his screens are probably genuine.
Yeah,
absolutely crazy. That and Jack Waltz, that character. Like, I was just one of the notes I put on was just like almost as xenophobic as Snatch. Man, he absolutely goes in. Like, first he's like, oh, I don't know any Goomba, Goonie, something, Guinea, blah, blah, blah. And then he tells him I'm German-Irish. He goes, well, my Krautmick friend. I was like, how did he come up with that so freaking quickly? Like, what the hell?
I wouldn't throw a bollocks card for this, but we have to assume that they drugged him. How else could they have got that fucking horse head in there without him waking up?
Yeah. Pretty much. I remember thinking, I was like, shit, was he drugged or something? Maybe they got to the cook to get the food or whatever. But Either way, he's not a man. He probably sleeps like a log.
Sleeps with the fishes. You know, you can have never seen the film and not know where the horse's head or the sleeping with the fishes line comes from, but you still know both those phrases.
Yeah.
But not knowing that they come from The Godfather.
Yeah, exactly.
People say it all the time. They're like, fucking hell, I'm going to wake up with a horse's head on my pillow. Like, you don't even know where that's from. Yeah, you have exactly. No idea.
Yeah.
As Christmas approaches, drug baron Salozzo asks Vito to invest in his narcotics business and for police protection. Vito declines, citing that involvement in narcotics would alienate his political connections. Suspicious of Salozzo's partnership with the Tagliatelle...
Oh, fuck. That is absolutely...
Italia.
No. Okay, he did that on purpose.
Italia.
Okay.
That's borderline racist.
That was brilliant. You had me for a second. I was like, that's absolutely going in the final edit.
No, let's edit that.
No, that's absolutely going in partnership with the Tagliatelle crime family.
They met with the Fusilis.
As Christmas approaches, drug baron Salozzo asks Vito to invest in his narcotics business for police protection. Vito declines, citing that involvement in narcotics would alienate his political connections. Suspicious of Salozzo's partnership with the Tattaglia crime family, Vito sends enforcer Luca Brazzi to the Tattaglias on an espionage mission. Brazzi is garroted to death during his initial meeting. Later, enforcers gun down Vito and coerce Hagen into a meeting.
Yeah, the Don is like... As the movie goes on and you see him talking to all the other bosses... It's so clear that he's the perfect crime boss because he takes emotion out of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and no shit.
Catching the next in line when Sonny speaks up and he's mad, he's like, why are you telling your thoughts to everyone?
Well, he knows Sonny's within the family.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like,
he doesn't miss a beat. He knows shit. Like, he knows Sonny's fucking a girl upstairs, you know? Like, and he knows assets, and he knows how to use and deploy them. He sends Tom to LA because he knows that Sonny's a fucking hothead.
It's mm-hmm. everything. Like, he's... One of the things with Vito is you understand how he's so calm and just understands processes and like, everything. So it's like, even his reason for saying no is like, well... The reason I have all the things I have is because of the political connections. I will lose those political connections if we start going to the drug business. So it's like, and even when he says it to him, he's like, look, I wish you all the best. I've got no issue with it. It's just, this is what I have to deal with to be able to be where I am. And then on top of that, I wish you all the best. But, because obviously it doesn't conflict with my interests. And he actually says that to him, isn't it? She's like, go do what you need to do. And that's also a way of saying, nice enough, she's like, look, you have all the, you can go be as great as you want to be because my stuff won't interfere with yours. But also, conversely, that's because your stuff won't interfere with mine. So it's almost like a blessing and a warning at the same time, but more the blessing side of things. It's just how he is. He's just really, really calm. He just gets everything. He just understands the wider picture always.
Exactly. His whole, like everything has been about the community. And all the people, he's like, I want you to be my friend. Why didn't you come to me first? I'll look after you, like family and all that. And I love that he said no to narcotics because it's like, it's only going to, you know, destroy the community. Exactly. It's like he's trying to build
it's
an...
It's dirty business, exactly.
Yeah.
He comes across as a very pleasant and caring individual, unless, of course, you disrespect him. And what is remarkable about that is he is the kind of man that you can actually relate to, even though he's untouchable.
Exactly.
You know, because he's kind unless you don't show him respect. And exactly. Isn't that the same? Isn't that true for all of us?
Exactly. Exactly.
I consider us three good people, but we've all shown a different side of ourselves when we feel like we've been disrespected. It's kind of relatable.
That's exactly what the power is with this film. Sorry, Ian, go ahead.
Did you find that this is where the game broke that for you a little bit? Where it's like, hey, I'm going to go to the tobacco store and extort it for money. It's just like, I've now extorted 15 stores, so I get a bigger boost from the family. You're just like,
yeah, no, I mean, oh, I'm not saying yeah, bigger money. Yeah. No, I'm not saying it pulls the wool over my eyes. At the end of the day, these guys are it's a criminal enterprise.
But that funny enough, it leads very nicely to my next point, because that is the whole point. Like, a lot of people say one of the dangers of this film and this even like the book as well is kind of it's the romanticism of the mafia. Like, you kind of see, or again, and to be fair, because usual example as you just put, it's a very, very good example where it's just like it kind of takes away from you because you go and extort stuff. And it's like that's probably more realistic than this film is.
Yeah.
This film is very realistic in terms of the motivations and stuff, but it only shows that one side. It gives a romantic view of good and evil in the mafia. Like, this is a good mafia family. What's a good mafia family? Do you know what I mean?
I always took these as well. The way he acts himself is, it's all business. So it's just that cold, it's like, all
business.
Thank you for presenting it. It doesn't conflict with my business, so we're good. It's not for me.
It's all business.
And it's just like, it doesn't matter what you say. And that's why he looks at Sonny and he's like, what are you bringing any of that into? It's like, personal. That's got nothing to do with this business. 100%
is so true. And that theme of business, of everything just being business, just runs through the whole kind of film. And I think in a way as well, it also takes away from it's another thing that helps with the romanticizing, because it takes away from the cold, hard fact of blood and this is, no, that was someone's uncle that died, or someone's son, or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, only in certain parts where it needs to be personal. Because we haven't even gone to that part yet. But again, that theme and that discussion happens further on as well. So, yeah.
Because even what Salazzo is trying to get at is, right, I've offered, let's do narcotics. You said no. So I've removed... When he shoots him, well, he says to Hagen, doesn't say I killed your dad. He's like, I killed your boss.
Yeah.
Now I need you to set up a meeting. It's straight back into it. It's you're doing narcotics. It's like, this is all, you know, all business.
Well, all I can say is that Luca Brasi didn't last long, did he?
Oh, that was so...
Yeah.
I think a death, like, scarred me a bit when I was a kid. I watched that when I was quite young.
It was unbelievable. Those eyes, how did they achieve that effect?
It's the struggle. It's the fact that, like, at first he's like... He's normal, and then he resists, and then he struggles, and you think, oh, he's going to be dead. And then there's that final struggle as well. Like, no, I need to... And it's like, that is such a...
Yeah.
A human reaction, isn't the final struggle for the... Oh, man, it's crazy. I like... No, what way to go?
It wasn't an amazing expedition in espionage, was it? I mean, Salazzo saw right through it.
I think it got red.
kind of haphazard plan.
I think they were just going to kill him anyway. I think regardless, the guy was an issue. He's like...
I think Bratzi, they knew, had to die. Like, if we're going after Vito, we've got to kill Bratzi. It's just... You know, probably more than Sonny. It's like that Bratzi will just, you know.
It seems like when he's in the halls of the hotel and it's dark, you realise it's because the world they inhabit is shady. And then you notice that the film is draped in shadow. It's gloomy and burnished. Mm. It kind of captures the mood of the Corleones. It's a film that kind of unabashedly portrays criminals as those who possess the American dream, but not in the American way. Like, they operate in the shadows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those halls are just so recognizable to me from the game. Because, again, your next mission is you're with Luca Brasi. You're basically, like, tailing him as, like, backup. And then you realize, you watched him kill him. And you're like, shit, I need to get out. So the whole thing is you need to get out of there. And you walk through those halls, and those halls were just so recognizable. It's crazy. It's crazy to me.
You have such a great memory. I do not remember that mission.
Oh, man. To the point where, you know, like, it was like, when you get that feeling, like, oh, I've been here before. It's like, no, you haven't. You just played the game. You just played the game shitloads, and so you recognize those halls immediately. Yeah. But they just replicate it perfectly.
We... Also, in this part of the film, it's not mentioned in the paragraph we just read, we got our first insight into Fredo.
Oh, man.
He just fumbles the fuck out of that gun. Not only does he not see it coming, he then fumbles the gun to try and protect his dad.
Absolute village idiot. It's like, and he can't... So go ahead.
He can't even make a decision once his dad's been shot. He's just stood there holding his head. And then
doesn't shout for help, doesn't say call 911, just crumbles.
Yeah. Literally anyone would have been better than Fredo in that way. Anyone.
Would you say that the inciting incident of the movie is the attempt on the Don's life?
I'd say so.
I think it's when it's the whole film just gets like you feel the pace of it change. The tempo of the whole movie changes in that assassination. Because
up until now, we haven't seen a significant shift in the status quo, other than Michael returning home and maybe introducing his new girlfriend. But that is just kind of happenstance. Like, Connie's wedding, the horse head, the meeting of the five families, none of those feel like they've ignited the movie's plot. Yeah. It's got to be when the Don gets shot.
Yeah, of course. It incites... Or it sets in motion a whole bunch of things that continue throughout the story because of that. Purely because of that.
Do you know what really pisses me off? Those apples looked amazing.
Oh, man, the fruit looks incredible. It's everything. It's like, as he's picking it, you're just like, man, that's a good choice. Orange and then pepper and then... So, man, he goes in and then...
It just looks like... You know, like such a small thing to do, yet he looks like he's living his best life.
Exactly. And that's like to the point where I was like, would he even have to pay for those, really?
No. Like, or but would he really be going out to pick his own fruit and veg? Yes. That's what makes him happy, I guess.
Exactly that. Like this is why I've done what I've done, so I can do stuff like this and like I said, the community is probably happy that he's there. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, well, certain parts of the community will be happy he's there for the most part, but it's just that It was such a peaceful moment until those guys turned around. It was almost like the roller coaster where they take you to the top and then just drop you. It's like, no, this is what it is, and this is what he has to deal with, and this is still his life. Because he in an instant, as soon as he looked over, saw them, was a little bit shifty, and as soon as they started moving, he tried to get across. And if he had anyone else other than Fredo, maybe he probably would have. But yeah, that is what it is. Mm-hmm. But that is.
I think his regular bodyguard would have been more on point. If you know what I mean, that's what.
I can't believe he didn't have one.
Well, that's the whole point. Paulie was meant to be the driver, so Paulie was meant to be there. So literally, the guy that I quoted at the beginning, 20-30 grand in small wheels cash. He's actually the driver, but he's also the driver and the soldier.
He was the soldier.
That's Paulie. Yeah,
because they kill him, don't they?
Oh man, Paulie's got to go. Which, funny enough, is your mission. It's also your mission in the game, right? And because of that, we haven't got to that part yet. But it's also your mission in the game. But because of that, you technically see yourself in the film. Because I remember thinking, shit, that's me.
The guy in the back of the car?
The guy in the back of the car is you. Because you're the guy who shoots him in the game.
Right.
So that's technically you in the film.
That's so clever. Well,
I just got really meta.
I don't know what the timing was, but he gets shot. He ends up in hospital. They're trying to call Michael, who is around but isn't around. And then all of a sudden, he finds out in a newspaper, like, printing. I don't know. That throws me off.
With Vito's firstborn, Sonny, now in command. So, fuck, what is that name? Solozzo. Solozzo. We had this last time.
Right. Yep.
There's no T though.
Yeah, but it's double Z in.
It's how they say Italian. Solozzo. Well.
Jonathan, I'm getting to the age now where I just can't stand you showing me up. So I am going to fucking hang up.
Shit. Oh, fucking hell. You should put that in the edit. That was fucking hilarious. You know what, Anton? Just get to the point. I'm tired of your shit. That was fucking brilliant.
you know where that's from? It was we were coming back from Luton. It was me, Ferris, Chris, and Ian. And Ferris had been on a fucking rampage verbally. I mean, he just could not shut him up. And it was like 8 a.m. and we had like it was the day we had
no sleep. Almost.
Yeah, and we had sociology on a Sunday.
Yeah,
and Ferris was talking about something, and Chris just looked up. He looked like he'd been asleep, and he just turned to Ferris and goes, "It's too fucking early in the morning for your shit." Just went back, and then literally went back into the position.
Oh, that's fucking amazing.
But it was funny because it was true.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course it was. Of course it was. I could just imagine hearing Ferris. Fuck it up.
With Vito's firstborn, Sonny. Right.
Salozzo, don't you know?
Fuck.
Two Z's.
Salozzo. What's that next word even mean? What does that even mean? No, I'm joking.
What, precious?
Precious? Precious?
Secured?
Very good.
So, lads, I think we are going to end it there this week, right?
Fully expected. Fully expected.
It's just one of those films that we were never going to get through in one sitting. So... let's wrap it up. We will see you back here in 2 weeks' time for part two. Hopefully it'll be the final part of our Godfather review.
Hopefully.
Yeah. In the meantime, my usual line would be, your futures haven't been written yet, but they have. Next time it's Godfather round two.
The Godfather, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know exactly what your future is. It's the Godfather. It's always the Godfather.
And in the meantime, check back through our back catalogue and pick a episode at random, because we have some reviews that you cannot refuse.
Oh, I like it. You've got some reviews that you can't refuse. That's awesome.
See you next time.